Good morning. Y'all can be seated. Thank you. Apologize for the delay. The Third Court of Appeals welcomes you. Justice Triana and Justice Kelly and I are glad you're here today. We are broadcasting this argument via YouTube, and it will be available to you on our YouTube channel if you choose to check that out after the argument. We also have with us your one of the parties, the appellees, exhibits for the oral argument today. This is cause number 032363 CV, the City of Killeen versus Encore Electric Delivery Company. If I could have councils introduce themselves and state whether they're ready or not. Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. For the City of Killeen, James Parker with me on the briefing is Robin Warner. We're ready to go.
Thank you.
Michael Heidler for Encore, the appellee, and we are ready.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Councils, I think you were here before. The way I've got it separated is 15 for your side, 20 for you, and 5 for you. If that works for the parties, then we'll go ahead and ask Mr. Parker to proceed. And the yellow light means you have 2 minutes left, and the red means you need to wrap up.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court.
Yes, sir.
This is kind of a strange little case. It's a case in which Encore seeks an advisory opinion against an immune governmental entity. And the court may be skeptical of that and say, well, why on earth would anybody do that? Well, Encore tells the court in the very first paragraph of its summary of its argument, when apparently there are cities right across this state that are contemplating initiating condemnation proceedings of streetlights that are owned by Encore. I think that may speak ill of the service that Encore is providing on its streetlights, but regardless, apparently that is a business risk that Encore sees. And so to address that business risk, to forestall that multiplicity of condemnation proceedings that it foresees coming right across the state, it decided, let's pick out one city, go down to the courthouse, get a preemptive injunction, and then we can hold that up across the state to all these cities and say, no, y'all can't do that. Here's the injunction to show you. Well, the problem with that plan, it makes great business sense. I certainly concede that, but it makes no legal sense because that lawsuit is non-jurisdictional. And the district court should have dismissed it for lack of jurisdiction for three reasons. First, it's not ripe. It's not ripe until the city council votes, as it's required to do under the government code, to initiate a condemnation proceeding. Second, the city's immune, and there's no applicable waiver of the government of that governmental immunity that's ever been recognized, and certainly nothing in statute. And third, this is not a case that the district court could allow Encore to replead as an ultra-virus case or anything else, because fundamentally, condemning the streetlights, if the city council had voted to do so, would be within the city's condemnation authority under Chapter 251 of the local government.
This is a unique condemnation. I used to do condemnation law for the county, and you know, most of the time in condemnation, you know, I'm going to condemn your, you know, roadside pasture or your business, and I'm going to expand the road. A whole different use for the property. In this instance, what Encore is accusing you of is, in essence, stealing their business. You're going to go condemn their streetlights, and then you're going to run their streetlights. You're not going to put a road over their streetlights. You're not going to do anything like that. So how do you respond to this is just your run-of-the-mill condemnation? You're really just trying to take their business away, aren't you?
Well, no, Your Honor, because the city hasn't decided to do anything. The city is the city council.
But your letter said we will file condemnation proceedings, and that was a city letter, right?
Sure, Your Honor. That was a letter sent by city staff.
Right.
And now it said we will, but this is exactly the point where we were in the TMPA versus Johnston case. And that is the Black Horse case. And this is, it's not a letter, let's be clear about this letter. It's not a letter that initiates a condemnation proceeding. It's an offer letter. It is an offer letter that says, we offer to buy your streetlights for, I can't remember the amount of money, it was $700,000 or something along that lines. And if you don't sell to us, we'll do this. But it is only an offer letter, and that offer letter is required to be sent under Section 21.01113 of the property code. But fundamentally, that's all it is.
In condemnation proceedings.
In condemnation proceedings, that's right.
Right, and so, I mean, the city could be doing business otherwise and send out an offer letter that's not governed by the property code. But y'all took three acts.
Correct.
That were specifically identified to march down the roadway of condemnation.
That's right. They are down the road, but there is one critical step that has to be taken, and that is the vote of the City Council to commence the condemnation proceeding. And this was the critical point in the TMPA versus Johnston case, because in that case, TMPA, which is another entity with eminent domain authority, had gone down the exact same path. They had sent over the offer letter. They had sent over the landowner bill of rights letter that's required by the property letter. But there's that critical step required by Chapter 2206 of the Government Code that says that the governing body must vote in an open meeting to initiate a condemnation proceeding before a condemnation proceeding can go forward.
Let me think about this practically.
Sure.
So is it your position that that vote could occur, and then if Encore beat you to the courthouse the next morning with their papers, they could seek the injunction? But if you beat them to the courthouse the next morning to file your condemnation, then a special commissioner's court would go, and would they ever be able to kind of preempt quickly to get their injunction, or would the special commissioner's process start going and they don't get to do anything until they're in court on your condemnation proceeding after the award is made by the special commissioner?
Well, and here's the thing with Chapter 21, and as Your Honor knows, Chapter 21 is a detailed and comprehensive statute that lays out the steps you go through. Mm-hmm. And in Chapter 21, Encore, as the landowner, gets to assert all of its defenses. It can move to dismiss the condemnation on the basis that the condemning authority does not have condemnation power. And while that condemnation process is going on, it can seek an injunction to prevent the condemnor from entering into or using the property that's at issue. So Encore, if the City Council makes that vote, and whether it has initiated, once it initiates the condemnation proceeding, Encore gets its day in court. It gets to assert all of its defenses. And the legislature could have permitted a preemptive injunction proceeding, the one that Encore filed here. Could have waived governmental immunity to that, but it didn't. It set out the clear path to allow Encore to have its day in court and assert all of its defenses.
But let me, so I can understand, because I did not practice condemnation law. So let's play it out. Let's assume the city starts condemnation proceedings. Are you saying that Encore could then go to the court and say, I want an injunction? So we get to keep this while this is all going through the commissioners, who, if I understand correctly, all the commissioners decide is how much it's worth. They don't decide whether it's constitutional or not, correct?
That's right.
Okay, so does the court get to say, while that's going on, y'all can keep running your streetlights?
Yes. The court can absolutely do that.
Okay, and if that's the case, then can the City of Killeen appeal that interlocutory and not have to post a bond, and they get to appeal it and actually take? Once again, I don't know a lot about streetlights either. So whether it's the posts and the wires and everything else?
Yes, Your Honor, it would be an injunction, and so I believe under 51.014A4, that would be appealable.
Correct. So
yes.
I guess my question is, it's appealable.
It is.
The City of Killeen doesn't have to post a bond other than maybe the bond for whatever the commissioners decide the appropriate amount for the compensation.
That's
would
right.
Be. But in practicality, the city would just take it over.
No, I think the district court could issue an injunction to prevent the City of Killeen from using or entering onto those streetlights.
Correct.
And then we wouldn't be taking it over.
But you appeal it.
And we would appeal.
What happens during the appeal?
And I would imagine that Encore would do as it did in this case, is seek an injunction from this court to preserve its jurisdiction on that. And that injunction would be in place during the appeal. So no, we would not take it over.
Okay.
So no, there is the path within Chapter 21, within the processes that the legislature mandated to wait for the City Council to take that vote. And just in the TMPA versus Johnson case, in which the First Court of Appeals held that it's not ripe until the TMPA board votes, that court said, look, this is not an immediate or unavoidable lawsuit. And those are the two requirements, because this is very avoidable. We don't know how the TMPA board would vote. We don't know whether it would vote. The two parties may negotiate an agreement not to avoid a condemnation entirely, or the TMPA board could vote no. And it's the same with City Council here.
But City Council unanimously agreed to send this letter that said we will file condemnation proceedings.
No, Your Honor, I would disagree with that. The City Council unanimously agreed to send an offer. And if Your Honor goes back to the video and the minutes of that meeting, which is cited in Encore's brief at page 28, actually, and you go through, if you skip through to an hour 40 minutes, I actually looked at it this morning, so I know exactly where the court should start looking. And there's a colloquy between counsel and the city manager, and the city manager is very clear that this is just an offer letter. This is an invitation to negotiation. And the city manager says, I'm not asking you to authorize a condemnation proceeding here. This is not a vote to initiate a condemnation proceeding. That's down the road, and hopefully we never reach it, because this is just an offer. It's an invitation to negotiations. So, no, Your Honor, that was specifically not what the council was doing, specifically what the council thought it was not doing it with that vote.
So two questions. One, then, is it your view, as soon as the City Council takes that vote to officially proceed with condemnation, then the case is ripe?
I think the case is ripe at that point, Your Honor. I think there are other problems with the case.
Sir, I'm just focusing on the ripeness, not to, you know, immunity and all that. But
yes.
Okay. And then question two is, why shouldn't we just stick with Patel? Why isn't threat of litigation good enough? Why should we follow the reasoning of this Johnston case that, you know, lies out this, that the vote is the pivotal point?
Sure. Well, because Johnston is a very different case. Patel is a very different case. Johnston's the same statute, same circumstance. Patel's a different case where the legislature has already given the department authority to enforce. I mean, there's no vote of the licensing commission or anything to initiate an enforcement action.
So one decision maker versus six or however many people are on the City Council of Killeen.
Well, it's that it already has the authority to go ahead. And so, and this is the DPS versus Moore case, anticipated litigation can be ripe, and it was in the Patel, but you need two factors. There has to be in the immediate future. So It has to be really soon. Like, there doesn't have to be a literal race to the courthouse, but maybe definitely a metaphorical race to the courthouse. And second, it has to be unavoidable. And so when the department says we are going to enforce, and it has a history of enforcing, and it has sent that letter that we are going to enforce, and there's no further action, that it doesn't need to go up to a board or a commission to authorize that enforcement action. Well, at that point, it is unavoidable. TMPA versus Johnston, and in this case, are very different. Whereas the legislature has already granted authority to the department and Battelle to enforce, the legislature has distinctly not given the city authority to initiate a condemnation proceeding right now before the city council or before the TMPA board, either one, has voted in open meeting to initiate that condemnation proceeding. If we had filed a condemnation proceeding without that vote, Encore would be up there to the district court saying, we move to dismiss because this is outside condemnation authority because the city council did not vote to initiate this condemnation proceeding. Therefore, it violates 2206.053. This is an illegal condemnation proceeding, and they'd be right. So it's not the Johnston case. It's the legislature that has created that tipping point in 2206.053 that before that city council vote, it's not right, because before that city council vote, a condemnation proceeding would be illegal. And so,
and Mr. Parker, you'll need to wrap up and we'll come back to you in a minute.
Because I have lots of questions.
Okay.
Time flies, we'll, Your Honor. Thank you.
Yeah, drink some water and get ready for Judge Triana's questions. Mr. Heidler.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court, Michael Heidler for Encore. Your Honors, Encore's claims are ripe, applying the legal standards in the Texas Supreme Court's Patel decision. In that case, the state agency argued that a suit to enjoin it from bringing an enforcement action was not ripe because the agency had not yet brought the action.
Okay, and Mr. Heidler, every time somebody quotes a 1934 case to me from the outset, I always question. A few things have happened. The legislature's met a few times. There might be some things that might have changed things. So tell me why I should not be suspect to a 1934 Supreme Court case when the property code has been amended related to eminent domain.
You mean the Lone Star gas case?
My apologies. Yes.
So Lone Star, I think, is relevant for three reasons, right? That the main holding is that the court can enjoin a city from initiating a threatened condemnation. So that deals with the ripeness and the immunity, and I can talk about those. But you're asking about the holding with respect to, is the condemnation permitted, right? And the City of Blue Mound case, the Fort Worth Court of Appeals analyzed the current property code, the current local government code, and said those statutes, just like the condemnation statutes that the Supreme Court considered in Lone Star, do not express any intent and do not contain any mechanism for a condemnor to compensate a condemned utility for the going concern value of its utility business. In the City of Houston versus Southern Water case, the 14th Court of Appeals reached the same conclusion. Now, we recognize that this court in the Texas Building Owners case questioned whether that part of Lone Star remains valid. Does it survive the Supreme Court's subsequent decision in Barshop, where the Supreme Court held that the legislature had created an adequate mechanism for property owners to be compensated for a taking of groundwater rights? But in the Texas Building Owners case, this court didn't have to reach that question. It didn't reach the question because it found that the regulations in that case did contain an adequate mechanism for compensation. So after the court issued the Texas Building Owners case, that's when the Fort Worth Court of Appeals did this in-depth analysis into the statutes and said, well, wait a second, these statutes really don't provide for compensation for anything other than property. They're providing the fair market value of property. They're not providing the business value, the going concern value for a condemned utility business. So that's why we think that the Lone Star case, that aspect of it, is still valid. But we think that the other aspects of the case are still valid because the court's holding is consistent with modern ripeness jurisprudence,
and the modern doctrine of governmental immunity.
Well, let's take a step back on the ripeness. In Lone Star Gas Company, was ripeness challenged?
It was not challenged, but the court, sua sponte, looked to see whether the threat of condemnation was sufficiently certain. So it looked and said, well, here we have a threat of litigation that is bona fide, real, and imminent. That's why the court went forward to decide the case.
Well, did they say that, or did they assume that, I guess is my question. Because they say, Weaver remarked, the city's not contending it was threatened, nor that the threat was impending, but we will therefore, in light of the importance of the questions of the public at large, consider the case as if such threat to institute the proceeding still exists and is imminent. So is that determining that the threat is imminent, or is that assuming that the threat is imminent for purposes of ripeness?
I think it's the latter, but the only reason the court would need to make that assumption is because it's recognizing if there's no imminent real threat of condemnation, the court shouldn't be deciding the case. And that's consistent with the Patel decision, right? And Patel, the state agency, says the suit's not ripe because we haven't brought the enforcement action. And the Supreme Court says that's not how ripeness works. The case is ripe because there's a real threat of a likely enforcement action, given that the state agency had sent warnings to the plaintiffs and had brought enforcement actions against other parties. Now, the city says that the Patel decision is distinguishable because in that case, the decision would be made by an individual, the executive director of the state agency, whereas here the decision would be made by the city council. But ripeness does not hinge on whether the decision maker is an individual or a governing body. And I'd give the court...
Mr. Adler, when do you claim that this suit became ripe? Was it the letter? Was that the final time where you say, okay, that made it ripe?
Certainly. So on tab one of my exhibits, I've reproduced the letter, and the court has the letter in front of it. In the letter, the city says unequivocally, quote, it is necessary for the city to acquire this property. Therefore, the city will proceed to file a condemnation suit under state law should an agreement not be reached. So the very first thing we get from the city is this express threat where the city says, we are going to condemn your streetlight system. But we didn't seek an injunction at that time because, as Mr. Parker notes, the threat of litigation must be pretty immediate. And so we waited. We waited until the city went through all the requirements of Chapter 21 of the property code, and I've summarized those steps on tab two of my exhibits. The city sent Encore this initial offer letter. It not only did it make an express threat of condemnation, but the city attached this appraisal report that it had spent some time commissioning at a price of nearly $200,000, and these detailed conveyance documents showing exactly what the city wants to take. So we're you know, pretty far into the process at this point. Then the city sends this landowner's bill of rights. It's all about condemnation. The first sentence states, I don't have it in front of me, it says something along the lines of, this landowner's bill of rights applies to any attempt to condemn your property. Then the city sends Encore a final offer letter, just like the property code requires. And finally, the city places the condemnation on its city council agenda exactly 14 days later, which is the minimum statutory time period in which the city could file the condemnation petition. So we waited until the last moment, unless we're going to have a race to the courthouse, which is what we're trying to avoid. And that's when we filed the condemnation petition. On
so
the right.
Was the final offer letter?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
So was it the final offer letter when it became right?
So the case law is not clear on exactly where in the condemnation process you need to be. We would distinguish the Johnston case that the city relies on, because in the Johnston case, the state agency had not gone through all those steps, right? And there were a lot of other differences between this case and the Johnston case. So certainly, once the city sends the final offer letter, they've threatened litigation, they've gone through all the Chapter 21 requirements, they're poised to consider this at a city council meeting, that's a real threat of litigation, it's an imminent threat of litigation, and we're justified in filing an injunction under Patel and under Lone Star Gas.
But why don't you wait till the race to the courthouse time? Clearly, it's right. They voted. I mean, let's imagine council members are elected, maybe one of them knows that they've got an opposing candidate that's coming after them, and they're coming after them because they've said something about these streetlights, and so there's a change of mind and heart, and they don't vote to condemn, and we've gone through all this. and that you were never at risk of being condemned in the first place, because one or two city council people that are on the ballot in another year have got opposing candidates that are coming after them because of this alleged taking of streetlights threat or potential. So why don't we wait and do what we were talking about earlier, is you bring all that in the condemnation case?
So the first reason is because Lone Star says we don't have to wait, right? Lone Star says the court can enjoin the city from initiating a threatened condemnation before the petition is filed. And in this case, that's really, really important, because I believe I heard Mr. Parker say, and maybe I misunderstood, but that while the special commissioners are conducting the administrative phase of the case, we could just go get an injunction. That's categorically not true. I'd cite the court to the N. Ray Lazy Water District case from the Texas Supreme Court in 2016 at 493 Southwest 3rd, 538, Penn site 542. The court essentially says that courts don't have jurisdiction over the administrative phase of the case. They have to be hands off. So the special commissioners would issue their award. At that point, the city could immediately deposit the award amount in the registry of the court and take possession of the streetlights. We would not have an opportunity, at least there would be a race to see whether we could file an injunction and get a TRO before the city could take possession. Once the city has possession, we face some real problems, some real practical problems, because we are heavily regulated by the PUC through our tariff, which is in the record. We attach it to our petition. We have obligations to maintain these streetlights, to repair the streetlights. Well, if the city has possession of the streetlights, that becomes tricky. We also have what we allege our distribution system and our streetlight system are inextricably intertwined. And that creates a real problem, because once the city has the first streetlight, remember, they're just condemning the streetlights. They're not condemning the wires that connect one streetlight to another.
Could they do that? Could they condemn those wires?
They could not, because they're trying to condemn the going concern value of our business, and the statutes don't provide any mechanism.
But let's say for a moment, are you saying that they can't condemn the wires because that's part of the regulated utility, or are the wires and the poles a part of the regulated utility and an ongoing concern? I'm a little unclear about how the regulated utility component and the ongoing concern argument intertwine. Are they separate arguments? Are they intertwined? They can't condemn a public utility that's regulated.
Yes, the streetlight system is a regulated utility. We allege in our petition that the PUC regulates Oncourse streetlight operations and rates through a tariff. The tariff's attached to our petition. It does regulate streetlight operations and rates. And so it is a regulated utility. Conceptually, it's distinct from our TDU, our distribution system. Physically, it's not. Physically, they are inextricably intertwined. And so once the city has the first streetlight, our tariff would prohibit us from operating the wires that connect one streetlight to another and that may feed into our distribution system. And so we allege, and the court in this procedural posture accepts our allegations as true, and this is a point I need to make really clear. There are a lot of statements I hear about what the city is planning to do and hasn't done and what they could do. In this posture, because the city did not introduce any evidence, the court accepts Oncourse pleaded factual allegations as true, and we allege that once the city has the first streetlight, portions of our distribution system and our streetlight system would be inoperable. And that's a factual allegation that the court accepts as true with this posture. So for them to come and take possession of the streetlights creates really big practical regulatory problems for us, which is why we've decided to move under Lone Star Gas to get a preemptive injunction before all of this occurs.
So under that theory, would they even be able, if they don't own the wires, would they even be able to use the streetlights?
No, Your Honor. They would have the first streetlight in the series would receive electricity. After that point, we would be prohibited. It's tricky. We'd be prohibited from operating the wires behind the first streetlight, but the wires are there, and we would own them. And so initially, we'd be in violation of our tariff, right? And then we'd have to decide, what do we do about that?
Well, and that's my question. So is it possible or is it not possible for y'all to say, okay, from here on, you can't go ahead, go forward with your poles and your streets, and I'm sorry, your streetlights, but could they use the electricity through the wires, or could y'all prevent them from doing that? Physically, I guess is my question.
Physically, we allege, and again, this is a pleadings challenge.
I understand.
Our allegations are that our systems are inextricably intertwined, and so if the city condemns the streetlights, portions of the distribution system and portions of the streetlight system would be inoperable. That's what we allege, physically would happen.
Okay.
If I may, I need to say a word on ripeness about this Johnston case that the city relies on so heavily and how it relates to Patel. Before I get to Johnston, let me address the Cosmopolitan condo case that we cited in our brief on page 25, because this is a case that is similar to the Johnston case in some ways, and that there was a claim to bar a homeowners association from bringing litigation, and that claim was ripe, even though a homeowners association can act only through its governing board, and that's in the property code at 82102A4, and the board in that case had not voted to approve the litigation. In fact, the court tells us that just the opposite was true. The board had voted that it would not authorize the litigation. Nevertheless, the claim was ripe because the evidence showed that the HOA was still seriously considering filing a lawsuit. So what mattered for ripeness was the serious threat of litigation, not the technical formality of how has the board voted. And so the city then cites the Johnston case, Texas Municipal Power Agency versus Johnston, where the court did hold that a vote was required before the claim would be ripe. But in Johnston, the claim, the potential condemnation, was hypothetical and contingent because the state agency had introduced evidence that it had not decided whether it would file a condemnation petition, and it had not determined any public purpose or necessity for the condemnation. Those aren't the facts we have here, okay? We've looked at the letter from the city, the very first letter where the city says it is going to file a condemnation petition. We've also looked at the letter where the city says it is necessary to acquire this property. I heard Mr. Parker say that letter is just by city staff, and we don't know if the city council just approved an offer or approved the letter. I'd urge Your Honor to look at the Cosmopolitan condominium case that we cite in our brief. In that case, the president or vice president of the HOA sent a threatening letter, and when the recipient of the letter, the developer, sued to stop the litigation, the HOA said, well, wait a second, that person wasn't speaking on behalf of the HOA, she was speaking in her individual capacity. And the court said, this is a plea to the jurisdiction, we draw all reasonable inferences in the non-movement's favor, we liberally construe the petition, you don't get to come in and deny that the person who sent the letter was acting on your behalf. And this letter, you know, it has all the markings of a letter approved by the city council. It's on city letterhead. It's signed by a city executive. I think there's a reasonable inference that the person who sent this letter had actual authority from the city to send the letter threatening the litigation. Also, in the Johnston case, I'd point out the agency had not gone through all the requirements of Chapter 21. Justice Trani, you mentioned where is the claim ripe. In that case, they had not completed the final step of a bona fide offer. They hadn't sent a final offer.
But in Johnston, they don't say that that's the reason that it's not ripe. I mean, aren't they pretty clear in Johnston that the triggering act for ripeness will be this vote from city council?
They are, and there's let's make 2 points about that. The first one is Johnston is factually distinguishable. On that case, it's possible that you would need a formal vote because you didn't have an express threat of condemnation followed by completing all the requirements of Chapter 21. So it's perhaps reasonable for the court to say on those facts, yes, you would need to have a formal vote. But Johnston, I believe, also conflicts with Patel, because Johnston not only says you have to have a formal vote, it says it won't be ripe until you file the petition. But if you look at Patel, Patel's ripeness standard doesn't turn on formalities. It's a flexible, practical test. Have the facts sufficiently developed so you can see that litigation is likely. The government is likely to bring litigation. And in this case, the facts are developed enough, right? This case is like Patel, where the facts are sufficiently developed that you can see the city of Killeen is likely to file a condemnation lawsuit. Otherwise, they wouldn't have sent this letter, they wouldn't have gone through all these proceedings, and we wouldn't have had this case on file for 2 years. They've had 2 years to decide if they don't want to bring litigation, not to do it, and they're still fighting this. I think there's a strong inference that there is a real threat of likely litigation in this case.
So I'm sorry. I was ready to move from ripeness.
Okay, go ahead. Move from ripeness.
Let's just assume we agree that it's ripe, and let's just assume that we agree with the argument that they're not just taking your, they're not just condemning your streetlights, that they're condemning your whole system, like the chief said, your business. Why doesn't the authority provided by the Texas Local Government Code 552.002B give the city adequate eminent domain authority to condemn it?
Because that provision refers to condemning property as opposed to business value.
Well, it says the municipality may use eminent domain authority to appropriate real property, rights of way, or other property as necessary to own and maintain an electric lighting plant. So you're saying it's got to be, it can't be value for value, I forget what we say, going concern value?
That's exactly right. So look at the Kimball Laundry case, where the government had condemned a commercial laundry facility during World War II. And the United States Supreme Court says, when you condemn the facility, you took not only the property, you also took the trade routes. Those are the customers. Okay. Well, here, Encore's customer, retail customer under its tariff, is the city of Killeen. The tariff is not a contract, technically. It's a regulatory instrument. It has the force and effect of law, but it serves the purpose of a contract between Encore and its customer, the city of Killeen. It establishes Encore's service obligations, the rates it can charge, the rates the city can pay. And through this condemnation, the city is trying to take that away from Encore, that going concern value, the ability for Encore to earn an income from its streetlights above and beyond the market value of the physical assets. In fact, that seems to be the whole purpose for this condemnation, is to take the going concern value of Encore streetlight business away from Encore so that the city can operate the streetlights. And let me point out, he said something about there's an inference about our service. This is a pleadings challenge. If the city had wanted to offer evidence that our service is inferior, that our rates are too high, they could have offered that evidence to the trial court. We would have rebutted it. There is no evidence along those lines. What we plead is that we had a rate case. The city had the opportunity to challenge our rates and services, and they didn't do so.
How do you address the city's contention that you can, I understand we're all talking about the race to the courthouse, but that under just the regular condemnation, Chapter 21, you know, y'all can file for that injunction in the trial court. If they appeal it, then you can come to us and ask for temporary relief as an injunction. Why should this not just proceed under the regular?
So two reasons. First, part of the regular course of proceedings is Lone Star Gas, right? It's the Texas Supreme Court opinion. It says we can get the injunction before they file. And if we wait until they file the condemnation petition, there's a period of time where courts have to be hands-off. That's the administrative phase of the condemnation. Once the case is converted to the judicial phase, the city can have possession of the streetlights. And once they have possession, we're in real trouble under our tariff.
But you can go to the trial court right then and there.
Potentially. It is a big risk because they're going to see the award and be able to go deposit it. And having done this for a while, I think they could deposit the award faster than we could go draft a TRO, go to the trial court, and get a temporary injunction. That's the risk. As soon as they deposit the award and get a writ of possession, we're in trouble under our tariff. So that's why we're filing this lawsuit now.
And my last question, do we have to conclude that your streetlight business is a regulated utility in order to decide that y'all are entitled to the going concern value?
You do not. And I point the court to the Kimball Laundry case. That is where the government condemned a commercial laundry facility during World War II to take over and operate the facility. The United States Supreme Court said you appropriated going concern value, so you have to pay for it. The commercial laundry obviously is not a regulated utility. If there are no further questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. And now let's hear from Mr. Parker. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. And to go back to the most immediate question from Justice Triana, no, I think under Texas law and under the Texas Constitution, you do have to find that this is a regulated utility. That's the Lone Star Gas case, and then that's the City of Blue Mound versus Southwest Water case, is that there are three requirements for that Lone Star Gas exception. First, that it's a regulated utility, and we all know what regulated utilities are. It's gas under the Gas Utility Regulatory Act. It's electricity under PURA. It's water and wastewater under the Water Code. Streetlights are not a public utility, it's a public service. So it has to be a regulated utility, it has to be the entirety of the regulated utility. And third, it has to be taken over for the purpose of running that business. And that kind of dovetails with it being a regulated utility. Here, we wouldn't be running the streetlight business because for us, for the city, it's a public service. It's not a utility. Nobody gets a streetlight bill at the end of the month, like you get a water bill or a gas bill or an electricity bill. So there are those three requirements under Lone Star Gas that creates that narrow exception to the city's condemnation authority that Your Honor referenced in the local government code. And that's under Texas law. It's three requirements for that one exception under Lone Star Gas, and you don't have any of those three here.
How do you see if they decide y'all get to condemn not the wires, but under their rules, they cannot provide electricity or whatever from the first one? What is the city going to do with one lamppost or one streetlight?
Your Honor, I don't know. Conceivably, there's an engineering solution. Conceivably, we run new wires. But we've been talking about a lot of ifs. We use the word if and would a lot here in this discussion. My friend Mr. Heidler used if and would a lot here. It's in their brief. You and I are talking about ifs and woulds. This is a layer of hypotheticals which reflects why this isn't right.
But this is different, like the chief said, from a condemnation of, you know, property, where at the end the property's still there.
Sure.
Versus, I mean, streetlights, it would seem to me that if I was a citizen of the city of Killeen, I would want my streetlights to work.
Sure.
Not have y'all decide, you know, what's going on in that period between the commissioners and what the trial court does or does not do, or what we do or do not do. So
sure.
I don't see this as, you know, I think the ifs are very important.
The ifs are hugely important, Your Honor. They're just unanswered here. If the city council votes to condemn, at the same time, it's going to have to do a number of other things. It's going to have to figure out, what is this necessary? And it's going to have to make a finding on necessity for the condemnation. It's going to have to state the public use. It's going to have to say, okay, and here's the wiring solution and how we're going to figure out how to make these this whole thing work from an engineering standpoint. And if the city council thinks there's merit to this Lone Star Gas issue, by the way, there is a solution to that as well. The city council can provide through, or the city can amend its charter to provide going concern compensation. That's actually a possibility that the Lone Star Gas case holds out, that the city of Fort Worth in its charter didn't allow for going concern compensation, but presumably a city in its charter could and provide that compensation, which would make that compensation and that compensability then constitutional and would bring it back within our condemnation authority. So, but those are layers of hypotheticals,
well,
all contingent.
How do you reply to the Kimber Laundry case where the court has said no, it doesn't have to one be regulated utility, and no, going concern value, the government can't do that?
Well, conceivably under our city charter, we would be able to do that if we amended our city charter to allow that. We could provide going concern value for the value of the business if the city ultimately went that route.
Okay, so you don't agree that y'all are prohibited from actually taking over
under Texas law? No, we're not. We're not. No, we have full power of self-government. We have full eminent domain authority, and if so long as we can provide just compensation under the Constitution, which conceivably, pending further action from the city.
Y'all would have to change your charter.
If Lone Star Gas were to apply, which for the reasons we talked about some moments ago, we don't think it does, but there is a path to doing that as well, hypothetically speaking.
So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We appreciate your argument, and the case is going to be submitted today, and we'll stand in recess. Thank you. Thank y'all very much.
Thank you.